Okay, so good morning, everybody. Kalimera se olus. I will continue in Greek for the introduction. So now you can see the camera, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Okay, so I will continue in Greek while the presentation in English is attached in Indigo. Είμαι η Γιώτα Φωκά και δουλεύω στο GSI Keser και καταρχάς να σας ευχαριστήσω για τη συμμετοχή σας σε αυτήν την διαδικτυακή ενημέρωση παρά την ειδοποίηση της τελευταίας στιγμής που οφείλεται φυσικά στον κορονοϊό. Όμως, παρόλες τις δυσκολίες και τις αβεβαιότητες για συμμετοχή, καταφέραμε να εξασφαλίσουμε ένα πρόγραμμα με πολύ σημαντικούς ομιλητές που θα ήθελα επίσης να ευχαριστήσω για τις προσπάθειές τους και τη διαθεσιμότητά τους. Σε συνεργασία με το Εργαστήριο Ατομικής και Πυρηνικής Φυσικής και ειδικά τη συναδέλφου Αλεξάνδρας Ιωαννίδου, η οποία είναι αντιπρόεδρος του Τμήματος Φυσικής του Πανεπιστημίου Θεσσαλονίκης, οργανώνουμε σήμερα αυτή την πρώτη σύντομη συνάντηση. Και σίγουρα θα θέλαμε να έχουμε μια πιο εκτεταμένη, ελπίζουμε στο κοντινό μέλλον, και ας ευχηθούμε αυτοπροσώπως και χωρίς περιορισμούς λόγω του κορονοϊού. Και έχουμε μάθει ότι αρκετοί συνάδελφοί μας και από το Πανεπιστήμιο και από το νοσοκομείο είναι άρρωστοι με τις οικογένειές τους. Ο στόχος αυτής της πρώτης σύντομης συνάντησης, Ari, maybe you can change slide, με τη μορφή μιας απλής επιστημονικής ανταλλαγής είναι πρώτον να ενημερώσουμε την επιστημονική κοινότητα στην Ελλάδα, ξεκινώντας από τη Θεσσαλονίκη, για την παρούσα κατάσταση και πρόοδο στη θεραπεία καρκινικών όντων με ιόντα, περαιτέρω δυνατότητες και ευκαιρίες που ανοίγει αυτή η μέθοδος, καθώς και σχέδια για μελλοντικές εξελίξεις. Μετά, θα θέλαμε να παρουσιάσουμε την πρόταση που έγινε από το Διεθνές Ινστιτούτο Νότιο-Ανατολικής Ευρώπης για βιώσιμες τεχνολογίες για μια εγκατάσταση για θεραπεία όγκων και βιατρική έρευνα στην Νότιο-Ανατολική Ευρώπη, καθώς επίσης και σχετικές δυνατότητες για επιστημονική έρευνα και θεραπεία ασθενών. Μια τέτοια εγκατάσταση θα συγκεντρώσει μια μεγάλη διεπιστημονική κοινότητα. Γι' αυτό θα θέλαμε επίσης να δημιουργήσουμε επαφές με την ευρύτερη επιστημονική και ιατρική κοινότητα στην Ελλάδα, να συμπεριλάβουμε σχετικές κοινότητες των Ελλήνων της Διασποράς και να συζητήσουμε τις τρέχουσες δραστηριότητες, τα ενδιαφέροντα και τα μελλοντικά σχέδια σχετικά με αυτό το θέμα. Ήδη γίνονται προσπάθειες για τον εντοπισμό και τη συμμετοχή σχετικών κοινοτήτων από την Νοτιοανατολική Ευρώπη. Και αυτή η συνάντηση σήμερα βασικά έχει και αυτόν τον σκοπό. Οι σχετικοί κλάδοι επεκτείνονται από την ιατρική, βιολογία, ιατρική φυσική, πυρηνική φυσική, φυσική ακτινοβολιών, επιταχυτών, ανιχνευτών, έως κλάδους μηχανικών, πληροφορικής, βιομηχανικής έρευνας, επιστήμης υλικών κλπ. Σε αυτό το σημείο θα πρέπει να απαντήσω στην ερώτηση «Γιατί στη Θεσσαλονίκη?». Και πρέπει να αναφέρω ότι είμαι απόφυτος του Πανεπιστημίου Θεσσαλονίκης και πράγματι ξεκίνησα την επιστημονική μου καριέρα στο Εργαστήριο Πυρηνικής Φυσικής. Η παρουσίαση αυτού του project σε ένα σεμινάριο στο Πανεπιστήμιο, όπου προσκλήθηκα από τον παλιό μου καθηγητή, κ. Τάσο Λιόλιο, προσέλκυσε ενδιαφέρον με τελικό αποτέλεσμα μια πολύ καλή συνεργασία που συνεχίζεται. Επίσης, οι παλιοί καθηγητές και συνάδελφοί μου από το Πανεπιστήμιο, που μερικοί από αυτούς εργάζονται τώρα στο νοσοκομείο Παπαγεωργίου, με έφεραν σε επαφή με την κοινότητά τους. Ταυτόχρονα, κάναμε επαφές με την Τεχνόπολη, το μεγάλο πάρκο επιχειρήσεων υψηλής τεχνολογίας στη Θεσσαλονίκη, που έχει ήδη συμφωνία συνεργασίας με το ΣΕΡΒ. Όλες αυτές οι κοινότητες έδειξαν μεγάλο ενδιαφέρον για περισσότερες λεπτομέρειες σχετικά με αυτό το project και αυτό ακριβώς πυροδότησε αυτή την πρώτη συνάντηση γνωριμίας, με σκοπό την επέκταση προς μια ευρύτερη κοινότητα στο μέλλον. Γι' αυτόν τον λόγο, οι λίστες από τις εγγραφές μέσω της ιστοσελίδας θα είναι πολύ χρήσιμες. Επομένως, εάν δεν το έχετε κάνει ήδη και σας ενδιαφέρει να λάβετε περισσότερες επικοινωνίες, μπορείτε να εγγραφείτε μέσω του συνδέσμου ή απλά να πληκτρολογήσετε το όνομα και το email σας μέσω του παραθύρου συνομιλίας του Zoom. Θα αρχίσουμε λοιπόν το πρόγραμμα με την ομιλία «Το CIST Project», τρέχουσα κατάσταση και μελλοντικά σχέδια από την πρόεδρο της Διευθύνουσας Επιτροπής του ΣΥΙΣΤ, Σάνια Δαμιάνοβιτς, η οποία είναι επίσης φυσικό στο τμήμα επιταχυντών του Ινστιτούτου GSI. Και μετά θα έχουμε παρουσιάσεις από συναδέλφους, πρώτα από το GSI, που είναι το ερευνητικό κέντρο βαρέων ιόντων όπου εφαρμόστηκε για πρώτη φορά η θεραπεία μειώντας στην Ευρώπη ως πιλωτικό πειραματικό πρόγραμμα. Ο Κρίστιαν Γκρεφ, αναπληρωτής του τμήματος βιοφυσικής έρευνας στο GSI, θα συζητήσει τα πρώτα αποτελέσματα αυτής της πρωτοποριακής εμπειρίας στην Ευρώπη, τα μελλοντικά σχέδια, προοπτικές και ευκαιρίες για έρευνα και θεραπεία ασθενών. Κατόπιν, σαν μέλος της Διευθύνουσας Επιτροπής του ΣΥΙΣΤ, η Μιμόζα Ρίστοβα από το Πανεπιστήμιο στα Σκόπια θα παρουσιάσει λεπτομέρειες σχετικά με στατιστικές και αρχεία πληροφοριών για τον καρκίνο, υπογραμμίζοντας την ανάγκη για μια τέτοια εγκατάσταση θεραπείας με ιόντα στην περιοχή μας. Ακολουθεί παρουσίαση από το ΣΕΡ, το γνωστό Ερευνητικό Κέντρο Σωματιδιακής Φυσικής και Βασικής Έρευνας, ο Μαουρίτσιο Βρέτεναρ, συντονιστής του προγράμματος ιατρικών επιταχυντών NIMS του ΣΕΡ, θα συζητήσει εμπειρίες με επιταχυντές και τις ιατρικές εφαρμογές τους, εστιάζοντας σε ευκαιρίες και σχέδια για την εγκατάσταση μιας νέας γενιάς επιταχυντών για την έρευνα και θεραπεία καρκίνου. Η εκπαίδευση και η προσέγγιση μαθητών είναι επίσης σημαντικά. Το Particle Therapy Masterclass είναι εκπαιδευτικό πακέτο προσέγγισης ενσωματωμένο στο Διεθνές Πρόγραμμα International Masterclasses, στο οποίο συμμετέχουν επί του παρόντος 55 χώρες. Ως μέλος της Διευθύνουσας Επιτροπής της, θα συζητήσω τις δυνατότητες που δίνει για να προσελκύσει μαθητές προς αυτές τις κατευθύνσεις, να τους ενημερώσει σχετικά με αυτό το θέμα, αλλά και αντίστοιχες ευκαιρίες σταδιοδρομίας. Ακολουθεί παρουσίαση της Τεχνόπολης, μια σημαντική κοινότητα υψηλής τεχνολογίας, από τον πρόεδρό της, κύριο Αναστάσιο Τζίκα, ο οποίος θα συζητήσει τις δραστηριότητές της, εστιάζοντας σε εξελίξεις που σχετίζονται με πληροφορική και τεχνητή νοημοσύνη. Ακολουθεί το Αριστοτέλειο Πανεπιστήμιο Θεσσαλονίκης, η αναπληρώτρια πρόεδρος του Τμήματος Φυσικής, κυρία Αλεξάνδρα Ιωαννίδου, θα παρουσιάσει τη δομή και τα τμήματά του, ενώ μετά θα παρουσιαστούν αποτελέσματα από μια πρόσφατη συνεργασία πάνω σε σχετικό θέμα από το μεταπτυχιακό φοιτητή Άρη Μαμάρα. Κατόπιν έχουμε μία ομιλία του Νοσοκομείου Παπαγεωργίου. Ο πρόεδρος του Διοικητικού Συμβουλίου, κύριος Μιχάλης Καραβιώτης, θα παρουσιάσει το σύγχρονο αυτό νοσοκομείο της Θεσσαλονίκης και θα συζητήσει τη δομή του και τις κλινικές του, καθώς και τις διασυνδέσεις και συνεργασίες με το Πανεπιστήμιο και άλλες εκπαιδευτικές και ερευνητικές κοινότητες. Και ακολουθεί μία παρουσίαση από το Kopf Clinic, που είναι μια ολοκληρωμένη ιατρική εγκατάσταση της Πανεπιστημίουπολης της Χαϊδελβέργης, με απευθείας σύνδεση με το Κέντρο Θεραπείας Ιόντων της Χαϊδελβέργης. Ο γιατρός Σάιμον Χένε θα συζητήσει τρέχουσες εμπειρίες και εφαρμογές της θεραπείας καρκινικών όντων με ιόν. Στην τελευταία παρουσίαση, ο αρχιτέκτονας κύριος Δημήτρης Καπρίνης θα δείξει τα πρώτα αρχιτεκτονικά σχέδια ενός ολοκληρωμένου συγκροτήματος, που εξελίσσεται ακολουθώντας το μοντέλο του ΣΕΡ, και θα συζητήσει την προσέγγιση για την επίτευξη μιας πράσινης εγκατάστασης, ώστε να μας αφήσει με μια ωραία οπτική εντύπωση ενός φιλόδοξου και προκλητικού έργου που έχει πολλά να προσφέρει όχι μόνο στην περιοχή αλλά και σε ολόκληρη την Ευρώπη. Εδώ θα ήθελα να ευχαριστήσω τον κύριο Μανώλη Τσεσμελή από την Διεύθυνση Διεθνών Σχέσεων του ΣΕΡ, που δέχτηκε να συνοψίσει αυτήν τη συνάντηση με μερικές τελικές παρατηρήσεις και να συντονίσει τη συζήτηση που θα ακολουθήσει με τις ερωτήσεις σας. Θα πρέπει επίσης να αναφέρω ότι ενώ αυτή η συνάντηση επικεντρώνεται στην ανταλλαγή επιστημονικών πληροφοριών, κάνουμε ταυτόχρονα κατάλληλες επαφές και στο πολιτικό μέτωπο για να καθορίσουμε την επίσημη συμμετοχή της Ελλάδας σε αυτό το έργο. Και θα ζητήσω από όλους τους συμμετέχοντες να πληκτρολογήσουν τυχόν ερωτήσεις μέσω του παραθύρου συνομιλίας του Zoom για τη συζήτηση στο τέλος της συνάντησης. Πιστεύουμε ότι πολλές ερωτήσεις θα απαντηθούν ούτως ή άλλως από τις παρουσιάσεις που ακολουθούν. Και τώρα θα δώσω το μικρόφωνο στη συνάδελφό μας, Σάνια Νταμιάνοβιτς, που εργάζεται επίσης ως φυσικός στο GSI και CERN, είναι πρόεδρος της Διευθύνουσας Επιτροπής του ΣΥΙΣΤ και ταυτόχρονα τα τελευταία 4 χρόνια Υπουργός Επιστημών του Μαυροβουνίου. Θα παρουσιάσει τα κίνητρα και στόχους του ΣΥΙΣΤ, την τρέχουσα κατάσταση του project, μελλοντικά σχέδια και χρονοδιαγράμματα, καθώς και τα ωφέλη για ολόκληρη την περιοχή της Νοτιοανατολικής Ευρώπης και πέραν αυτής. Σάνια, are you there? So, Aris, you can stop sharing. If Sanya is not already here, she told me that she has a doctor's appointment. Maybe we can take Christian. Christian, are you ready to share?
I'm trying to.
Okay. Thanks very much for your participation. Okay, we see your screen. You can put it full mode. I stop my camera and I mute.
Okay, so
I will give you a warning. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Thank you.
Thanks for the introduction and the invitation. I could not understand the introduction, but I hope you can understand my talk and also see the slides. So I will now give you an introduction and what this cancer therapy with ions actually is. But I will actually start with showing a few pictures of GSI so that you have an idea where I'm coming from. So this is a picture of GSI. This is a basic physics research facility we operate, and it's in Darmstadt in Germany, where you, yeah, this is here. So just to give you an idea where I am, if I'm not at your place, as it's dictated by Corona currently. So, but we operate a number of large particle accelerators where we can accelerate ions, basically every natural occurring element we can accelerate in our facility from protons to uranium. And we have basically two very large accelerators. One is a linear accelerator, the UNILAC, and then the CIS-18, which is a ring accelerator, a synchrotron. And here you can see some figures on our size, so it's a large facility. But what we also did a few years back is we had a pilot project on carbon ion therapy for a little bit more than 10 years, where we treated over 400 patients in this basic research facility, and we built a therapy cave where the beam from the synchrotron is going to for this purpose. So we are also still building because currently GSI is becoming fair. So what you saw before was the GSI facility, which is this part, and we have this the existing synchrotrons here, and this will be the next bigger synchrotron. So this is the CIS-18, and this will be the CIS-100. Yeah, and so this is how it looks currently, and this is how it will look like when it's done. So then we have another set of new accelerators, and this one will be about 5 times as large as the existing one, and it will give us a lot higher energies, but also a lot higher intensity, so just more beam, more particles in the ring at the same time. And we will also, with this high intensity, manage to produce antiprotons and also secondary beams of radioactive ions. And this will also be more relevant for therapy at some point. So, and this is also already realized today. So the fair construction, as you saw, is ongoing, but we also already upgraded the existing accelerators, and we can already reach a lot higher intensity than before. And at GSI, we have the biophysics department, which was basically or became prominent for installing this pilot project for carbon ion therapy. And we are a pretty large group still, even though the pilot project is finished, and we continue to do basic research, but also applied research in the fields of ion irradiation and its interaction with biology. And this has applications in therapy and also in space flight. The director is Marco Durante, who you can see here. I'm his deputy. So this is our group, and now we'll continue with explaining what particle therapy actually is. So, of course, this is a form of radiotherapy where you can just use to cure cancer and also other diseases. And here we don't use X-rays, but we use protons or other light ions, and most of the centers here use carbon, or basically all the active centers that don't use protons use carbon currently. And this is accelerated in these large accelerators that you saw at the speed of up to 70% of the speed of light, and then directed at that target. And then these particles behave more like a beam than matter. Yeah, so the aim in general of radiotherapy is to identify the tumor. So it's, of course, it's a local therapy. So you try to direct the beam to this tumor that we identified in the brain of the patient. And then the idea is that we want to destroy this tumor. But this is basically only half the story, because destroying the tumor is very easy. Yeah, so you can easily kill the tumor. The difficult part in this is actually to keep the patient alive around the tumor. Yeah, so you want to kill the tumor, but you want to spare the patient and have as little side effects to the patients as possible. And this is basically the reason why we actually look at at particle therapy, because particles are much better at achieving this ideal picture of destroying the tumor and not destroying the tissue around. Here you see a picture of a beam that is shot into the patient. So the beam is going along this axis here. And as it enters the patient, it deposits dose or energy into the patient. Yeah? And for an X-ray beam, you basically see that there's a sharp increase it to a shallow depth, and then there's only a fall off. Yeah, and typically the tumors are located in a rather deep inside the patient where they are, where we want to treat them. And with particles, you basically have this inverted dose profile. So you have a shallow entrance where the healthy tissue is, and then you have this sharp increase where the beam slows down and stops. And here you have this very high dose maximum, which you can then you can also change the position of this maximum by changing the initial energy of the beam, and then you can really direct the high energy to the tumor and the low dose in the healthy tissue. Yeah, and then if we think to carbon ions, heavier particles than protons, there's actually a differential effect between this entrance channel here and the dose maximum. So in the entrance channel, the beam still has a high energy, and it means it has a low probability of actually interacting with the tissue. So there's basically little dose given to the tissue. And also, as it passes quickly through the tissue, there's only low energy transfer and a lower biological effectiveness. And that also means that fractionation, so the separation of this, giving the radiotherapy in several sessions, not giving it in one shot, but in several sessions, there's a sparing effect for healthy tissue in this region, especially. And at the dose maximum where the beam stops, the beam has a low energy. So it has nearly stopped to, lost its velocity. And then at this point, it loses energy more rapidly than when it's fast. And that also means that this energy is concentrated in a very low volume. And therefore the destruction of the tissue is higher and the biological effectiveness is higher. There's very little fractionation effect, and also due to these complex damages to the DNA in the cells in the end, it's more effective in a hypoxic tissue, which tumors often are. Yeah, and this basically comes very close to this ideal situation that I told you about in the beginning, that you want to spare the healthy tissue and then destroy target destruction of the tumor, which is where you can direct the beam to. If you look at this on a patient scale, so this is now a cut through the lung. Here you see the heart. I noted a bit of the anatomy here. So, and this patient here has two tumors in the lung, and we want to treat these tumors. And now you see in false color, so the colored part is basically the dose that you give to this patient, and the red region is the target dose that we want to use to destroy the tumor. And if you use photon therapy for this aim, then basically you can achieve a very nice target dose, but at the cost of basically giving lower dose to the entire region around these tumors. Yeah, and the reason is that you have to direct the beam to the target from many directions, and the entire slice of this human being is objected to dose. And especially here, the heart gets a lot of dose. And opposed to this, if you use carbons, you can use much fewer fields, directions where the beam is coming from, and you still achieve basically the same target coverage. But in this case, for example, the heart basically gets no dose at all. And this is a huge advantage that particles offer. Here is more locations inside the body, in the skull, in the head and neck region, again, a lung tumor, but also in the pelvis or in the abdomen. These plants are all, this is again, on the left side is photons, and on the right side here now is a proton plant. So you can see also with protons, you can achieve this effect that you basically keep the target dose, but you reduce the amount of dose given to the healthy tissue by a lot. So to directly compare then carbon and protons, this is just a single field where you can see that basically the first advantage of protons is that they are lighter particles and the mass to charge ratio is better. So you need a lot smaller accelerators, and also the beam transport to the patient is a lot easier. Then there's another advantage that the protons really stop. So you can see here, this is a proton field that enters the patient from the back. And at some point here, the beam stops and there's no dose after this point. For carbon, this is not the case. So the carbon basically has an exit tail. So behind the Bragg peak, there's still dose. So you can see here that that some fraction of the beam actually leaves the patient again, though the majority of the dose is given here to the target region. But on the other end, you can see that the carbon ion is a lot more precise. Yeah, so basically it doesn't scatter so much. So if you compare these two images here, then the beam is a lot more concentrated to the target and the fall off to the healthy region is a lot sharper than it is for protons. And again, there's this biological effect that the dose given to the tumor is more effective against radio-resistant tumors. So I'd already told you a bit about the GSI pilot project. So this was actually the first time that patients were treated with carbon ions in Europe. So we basically constructed this KFM facility. And basically this was a very successful collaboration of a university clinic, the one in Heidelberg in Germany, which is nearby, and two research laboratories where GSI played a major role, but there was also a significant contribution of the Helmholtz-Zentrum in Dresden. And there was many major technical advances that were done for this pilot project and basically realized for patient use for the first time. And many of this is still in use in today's modern clinical facilities. So for example, RASA scanning, where I can show you a small movie, which I hope also works over the remote connection. So you can see here that the beam is not applied to the whole target at once, but it's rather formed in a small beam, and then it's scanned over the target. So as this beam consists of ions, we can just use magnets to deflect it, and we can scan it over the target and thereby achieve this very conformal dose application. And whenever you see that this plane is shifting through the target, then we actually change the energy and we change the location of the Bragg peak inside the target. And with this technology, you can achieve very precise dose application. Furthermore, there was also PET imaging for the first time in a large scale realized for this kind of therapy, which you see here behind Professor Debus, who was the clinical director of this trial. You see here a PET camera, which is a bit hidden inside of these two blocks. And I will tell you more about this later, but this is a very nice feature to monitor the application of the beam. So and then we treated 440 patients in the 10 years it was running. And I also show you a bit of the outcome. So what you can see here on the vertical axis is the local control. That means that the tumor that you treated does not recur. So basically you treated it and then it's gone over a long time. And here you see that this is the 5-year local control. So that basically means 5 years after the treatment, we look at the patients again and judge if the tumor recurred or not. Or basically this is that's a bit simplified, but okay, you get the message. So, and here you can see that for at this time, the photon therapy had very low success rates for this kind of tumor, but particles, and specifically if you increase the dose, which is plotted here with carbon, then you can achieve very high local control rates. Yeah, so this was one of the success stories of this pilot project. And then another tumor, a chordoma, which is shown here, basically shows over a time axis, this very long-term data. So here you have 10 years, here you have 15 years. And you see that if we split the patients by age, so the blue line here, actually is the younger patients, none of them failed. There was one failure in the beginning, but then basically all of them are cured to this day. So that was a huge success. Yeah? And the elderly patients, we still have a pretty high local control in 10 years and then it starts to drop. But so basically, I want to give you a single example of this, yeah, just to make this a bit more plastic. Yeah? So this was a young boy at the time he was treated. He was had a chondrosarcoma, a tumor in the base of the skull and around the eyes, which was first treated by surgery, but then recurred. And this is always very bad. If a tumor recurs, that usually has a very bad prognosis for the patient. And he was 8 at that point in time and was then treated in KFM with carbon ions. Basically, this publication of this data is from 2017. So he had a local control of this tumor for 10 years. So basically, he's healthy, though he's still under supervision. And even more remarkable, in 2017, he finished his school education, and he was preparing to enroll to study informatics. So basically, not only the tumor was cured, but there were also very, very little side effects on this patient. And he's obviously intelligent and able to live a normal life. So this is a very nice success. And based on this success, clinical facilities arose in Europe. And the first of those is the Heidelberg Ion Beam Therapy Center, where you will also hear a doctor from later on. And this is the layout of the facility. So this is the synchrotron that is used to accelerate the beam. And then there are three treatment rooms, one with a single beam line, which is a fixed beam line, and one with a large gantry where you can rotate the beam around the patient and treat from many angles. They treated now more than 5,000 patients, the majority of them with carbon. As you can see, it operates a long hours and a lot of days a year just to make use of this very expensive equipment. And as a fun fact, this entire facility here is about 60 meters in size, and it fits inside our currently existing smaller synchrotron. So basically, the machinery that we operate here is very large and a bit oversized for clinical operation. It's still an expensive machine. This is now a map of currently operating carbon ion centers worldwide. So you see there are four in Europe, one is HIT, then the second one in Germany, one in Italy, one in Austria. And then there's a lot of centers, six in Japan and currently two in China. Japan is basically the country currently treating the most patients, and they also have the center that is the longest in operation. It was very instrumental, especially in the clinical implementation of this therapy, which is HIMAC. There are about 90 proton centers currently in operation. 35 of them are in the US, so there are currently no carbon centers in the US. So you might see that a lot of the world is actually missing, but that's just because they don't have carbon centers currently. But the US has one center that basically now is financed and hopefully will also be built, which is in Florida. And here you see statistics from the PTCOG, the Particle Therapy Cooperative Group, which is kind of a coordinating group for all these centers in the world. And this is a huge success story. So here you see the increase of treated patients over time. This is the total number of patients. So by now we treated about 250,000 patients, about 30,000 of them with carbon. And this is a really good success story for a clinical transition to of the really basic science. Yeah. On the other hand, for comparison, these 250,000 patients is actually a bit less than the number of patients that is treated with conventional radiotherapy in Germany alone each year. Yeah, so though this is already a large success story, we are a bit away from being an established and widespread technology. So this is still a small number compared to the overall cancer numbers. So, and this also means that it's still an emerging technology in spite of being in wide use. There are tons of research topics. So this is just a 5 minutes brainstorming effort of just collecting some of the topics that are under research. You can also see that I'm a technical person. So all of these are technical issues. But of course, there's also a ton of clinical and radiobiology topics that you could look at. And of course, this is way too much to even scratch the surface and explain to you. So I just took out two topics. One of them is the range uncertainty and specifically PET imaging for this. And then if we have time for this, I will also show you a new application of ion beams. So range uncertainty basically means that this dose maximum that you have at the end of the range is on the one hand the biggest advantage of particle therapy, but on the other hand, it's also dangerous. Yeah, you have to be very sure where you actually place this beam. So if there's a change in the patient and you are no longer sure where the beam stops, then you can actually give a lot of dose where you don't want to have it. Yeah, so you can see here for photons, if you introduce some disturbance, the shift is actually minor. But if you do this with a carbon beam, the change in dose between these the black and the blue curve is actually pretty large. So there is a ton of measures to actually reduce this uncertainty. The simplest one is just to increase the treatment volume. So you just give more dose so that you are sure that you actually treat the tumor. But there's also a lot of effort to reduce this uncertainties and make this this error smaller. For example, with better planning images, the current hot topic here is dual energy CT or also particle imaging. There's a lot of 3D setup imaging now, which just increases the precision with which you can set up your patient and reduce these changes in the anatomy. But there's also beam monitoring techniques, and one of them is PET, which I will tell you about in a minute. So this is just to illustrate the effect that these margins have. Yeah, so this is basically what a typical proton plan would look like today. Yeah, that you have to use large margins just to make sure that you actually hit these tumors. And you see that this is what you want to treat, this pinkish curve here. And this is what you actually have to treat to really make sure that you hit the tumor. And this is kind of underselling the technology. Yeah? So what we could actually give if there are no margins, and this is the theoretical ideal plan for the same patient, this is the difference, right? So if you manage to reduce the margin here that you have to use to safely treat the tumor, you can actually spare a lot of healthy tissue. So the effect is very significant, and it's a worthwhile aim to make this treatment more precise. So, and as I told you, one possible way of monitoring the beam for particles, both for protons and for carbon, is actually PET imaging. And PET imaging, so this is positron emission imaging. So you basically produce with the beam itself, you produce radioisotopes that emit positrons, and those decay into gamma. So the actual generation of the image is a bit complex, but what you can basically do is you generate with the beam itself activity in the patient that you can afterwards measure and then compare to a predicted activity. So you start off with a treatment plan, and then you do a prediction of how this treatment plan here should create activity in the patient, and then you can compare these two, so the predicted to the measured activity. And this already gives you a high confidence level of that the beam actually reached the target that you wanted to, and it actually stopped where you wanted to stop. So this was done for a lot of patients in the pilot study. And for this very new technology, it gave a large degree of confidence to the clinicians, especially where they could see after the treatment immediately that what they wanted to deliver actually was delivered. But you can see that this image here actually has not a real correspondence yet. So there's a lot of noise, obviously, even in the simulation and also in the measurement. And the correspondence between these two maps is a bit shaky. But we could do this a lot better. So what we could do is, instead of waiting for the beam to produce some isotopes in the target, we could actually use these isotopes directly. So we know which radioactive isotopes we have to use to create these PET images. And what we could do is we could, instead of waiting for it, we could just use it directly. And the effect you can see here for the same number of primary particles, if we use the usual carbon ion, so the stable carbon element, then you get this kind of signal. This is after 20 seconds and this is after 20 minutes, so just a very different time scale. And you can see that there's a very diffuse activity here, and also where the beam stops, you get a bit of higher dose, but there's a lot of dose also here.
And if you,
okay, so if you go to a radioactive isotope, you can actually see that after 20 minutes here, you have a very sharp line where the beam stops. And if you use a more exotic isotope, 10 carbon, which has a lower half-life, you actually see this sharp line of where the beam stops practically immediately after treatment. So this would be a major improvement of therapy, which will now be investigated in a large European grant that was given to the director of the biophysics group. Just to speed up a bit, so the problem with this is that the production of these two isotopes is very inefficient. So you need a huge intensity in the primary beam to actually produce enough ions of these radioisotopes. But the lucky case that we have at GSI currently is that we already have this FAIR upgrade in place, and we actually have this huge intensity available. So what we can do is we can use the high energy beam and sophisticated equipment that we have here to generate beams of this 10 carbon and 11 carbon. Yeah, and this is the estimated intensity that we get, which is very well at the clinical levels that you need to actually deliver real treatment plans. And the idea of this project, of this BAR project, would be to conduct the basic research up until preclinical efficacy assessment, and then judge if it's worthwhile to go with this in a clinical realization. And so this in-flight separation that we use here is not really possible for the clinic, but there's already studies that show that you could use a radioactive source, which uses the so-called ISO technique, to actually generate these isotopes and then use and only accelerate these isotopes, not use a primary beam to generate them at a high energy. So this would enable us to really reduce these range margins by a lot and then spare the patient a lot. Jutta, do I still have 5 minutes or should I skip the second example?
Go ahead.
Okay, so example two is what we did here at GSI is a novel application of these ion beams, which is actually the radio ablation of heart rhythm disturbances, so arrhythmia of the heart, which is a very widespread disease and which is also life-threatening for a lot of patients. And there was one clinical trial in 2017 with photons in only a few patients, but the effects were very dramatic. So basically these patients suffered from a too fast heartbeat of the ventricle, of the main chambers, and they had so-called VT, ventricular tachycardia episodes, basically daily. They're actually these two most hard hit patients. So for these patients, it's the number of episodes per month. But here for these patients, it's actually the number of episodes per day. And at this point, they did the treatment with photons. And you see that these numbers basically drop to more or less zero. So for a year afterwards, they have only very few isolated incidences of these VT episodes. And even more important, these patients have so-called cardio defibrillators implanted, which shock them if the heart goes totally out of rhythm. And there was basically, in these five patients, there was basically one event of this per day, which usually means that the patient is unconscious afterwards. And again, this dropped to basically zero. So one year after they had the first of these events again, but for basically 1 year, these patients had no events at all. So this was a huge impact. It was also published very well. And we actually already did a study with particles a bit before this paper was published. So the reason why, again, you should use particles is that it's the same as before. So here's the target region where you have the high dose in both cases. And with photons, you again give dose to the entire body, but you can target this a lot and spare the heart a lot better with the ion beams. So what we did is in 2014, so before this very interesting study was published, we already treated a number of animals, and we aimed to control, target the heart rhythm in these animals and change the heart rhythm with a beam without, so non-invasively. And we gave them two fields of irradiation and also monitored this again with a PET camera. So here you see an example of the beam coming in, treating a region of the heart. And then after the treatment, we could see the activity in the heart. But you can also see that if you do this very fast after the treatment, you can still see the signal, but as the heart is so good perfused with blood, the activity goes away. So basically there's a biological washout and you need a fast signal. So this image would look a lot different with radioactive beams. So then you would really see a very, very nice signal here in the target region immediately after treatment, and this biological washout would not affect you. And in these images, then in these animals, we observed the intended targeted changes a few months after the irradiation. And also we did not observe any side effects in any of these animals up to 6 months after the therapy. So just as a brief glimpse in some research project that we have done, and just to summarize, so particle therapy is currently the most advanced form of therapy, but it's also already a clinical reality. There are more than 100 centers operating worldwide, and it has a large dosimetric advantage due to this finite range and this dose maximum at the end. And there's also a biological advantage for these heavier ions, which is why we're so interested in them. More than 250,000 patients have been treated, but it is still a research topic. Also, a lot of clinical questions are open. Yeah? And the most urgent question is the cost-benefit ratio. Yeah? Which patients should we treat with this technology so that they benefit the most? And for this, we really need more clinical studies that provide evidence for real patient benefits. And of course, also a large multidisciplinary research effort, as Jutta also already told you, in lots of different science fields, from medicine to engineering, to further optimize the therapy and improve the precision of the actual applicable technology in the patient. And as a final slide, I would like to show you this group of people, which was the kickoff meeting for the biophysics collaboration, which was done when there was still no corona, only a year ago, but it seems to be a lot longer actually. And this was is the International Collaboration of Biophysics Research at Accelerator Labs for Therapy in Space. There were 250 participants from 5 continents, which was actually way more than we ever hoped for. And it was a great success, but actually there was only one Greek lady present. So we would like to invite your contributions and your collaboration. If you're interested, you can visit this website here, and we would be happy to have you in this collaboration. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Christian, for this nice, very nice overview. And I hope more colleagues are going to join the collaboration. I see we are a little bit over time, but I see that there are several colleagues from the hospital that I don't know for how long they will be able to stay. So if there are any questions, that we can take a couple of questions right now. If not, people can type in the chat window and we are going to collect the questions. Is there any question right now?
Can I have one question, short one, please?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So Christian, you said you can treat ventricular tachycardia. How many sessions are needed to make it happen, to make that ablation probably effect on the cant binding? I don't know what is exactly you are hitting, but I guess this is a cant binding you're targeting. How many sessions are needed for success to so get rid of that?
This is currently really emerging as a success story for photons. So there has been a single patient treated with carbon by now at CNAM, mm-hmm. but a lot of patients treated with photons, and the standard treatment scheme currently is really just a single session with a very high dose. So typically they are given 25 gray in a single session.
That's wonderful, because you have incidence one on 100, on 1,000 population is born with this. So I was one of those. I had a treatment in Germany for many years ago, ablation, just ablation.
Yeah. So
this is a very, very prosperous thing. And thank you for showing this.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I see that Sanya is... thanks again, Christian. You can stop sharing your presentation. And Sanya can share her own. Mm-hmm. Sanya, you can hear us, right?
Yes.
We still see your presentation, Christian.
While changing the presentation of Sanya, there is another question in the chat.
Ah.
So, Thomas, maybe. Would you like to tell it? Just unmute yourself. And...
Yes, hi. Well, the question is, what makes carbon ion beams more precise than photons?
And photons or protons? So the for in principle and the more higher precision compared to protons, it's just that they are heavier. So the scattering of the beam to the sides is less, just because the projectile is heavier.
Okay, it makes sense. And the second is, could carbon ion beams cause cancer where there was not?
So, I mean, in principle, any form of ionizing radiation can, of course, cause cancer. But there have been now long-term studies that actually from the Japanese colleagues, that the incidence of secondary cancer, which is very low in any form of radiotherapy, is actually lower than for photon therapy. Yeah, just basically the scales with the integral dose that you give to the patient. And as the treated volume with carbon ions is so much lower, it actually makes sense that it's also less likely to cause a secondary cancer.
Okay, thank you very much, Christian. Sanya, I have introduced you already, so you can go ahead. Thank you very much for your participation.
Good morning to everybody, and apologies from my side because I misunderstood that the start is according to the Greek time, not. actually, as always, I'm very happy to talk about this special event, Project CEAST, and I'm addressing you as the chairperson of the Intergovernmental Steering Committee. So actually, this initiative came from originally from Professor Schoppe at the end of 2016. I'm sure many of you already know the story, but nevertheless, I think this is the time again to remind a little bit about the history. End of 2016, at the occasion of the WAS meeting, and it was not picked up by anybody. At the end of 2016, I became Minister of Science of Montenegro, and I heard about this initiative, and being from the region myself, of C region, I got infected, and since then we started to work together. And it took only a few months to convince the government of Montenegro to officially support this initiative. And there was an open letter sent by Prime Minister of Montenegro. And very quickly, we received positive reception from many organizations, institutions, and the logos are listed below. Now, the mission of the CEAST project is to promote collaboration between science, technology, industry, based on the transfer knowledge from other laboratories like CERN, GSI, and the others. Another important mission is to provide platform for improved education of young scientists and engineers. A very important objective of this project is to foster cooperation between countries in the region because there are quite a lot of still tensions in this special region of Europe. Now, due to recent history in the region of Southeast Europe of 1990s, all scientific economic activities very much slowed down. As a consequence, our region suffered ever since was from strong brain drain, which is, I would say, the largest economic loss of our region, and Western Europe is really picking up our best talents. So we are not so wild because in the past we had an incredible good period of technological development, and there are many, many good examples. A few to mention, Yugoslavia was a founding member, and Greece also of CERN in 1954. But also in our region, there were a number of institutes even older than CERN, but now the most effective way, we all know what the research infrastructure means, and the most effective way to slow down brain drain or to recover this tradition is to build up really magnet, meaning large scale facility based on the latest technology. So the core of the project is facility for tumor therapy, biomedical research with protons and heavy ions, but I want to also to remind you, it did not come immediately because we wanted to, the initiative was to build something, but what? And then we were trying to look what that could be attractive for Europe, competitive in Europe, but also at the same time what would trigger political support much easier. And in this period of few months, from December to March, or I don't know, May, I need to really remind you, and I wish to thank very much to Hans Specht and also Nicolas Samut, because thanks to them, actually, we propose the hadron therapy as a second option. At that time, we wanted to go in two directions, to build not only one infrastructure, but two, a synchrotron light source based on the newest fourth generation, and this one, hadron cancer therapy. But I want also to remind people that of the role of other people, which we should not forget. So here in this picture, you see HIT Heidelberg, which is the first such facility in Europe. And this method, and there will be a lot of speakers from the field to show, is one of the most modern, most powerful method to treat a large number of tumor types. There are in the world only 12 facilities of this type, 4 in Europe, 6 in Japan. But CIST is not going to be just 50 in Europe. CIST is going to be unique because we are planning to dedicate 50% of the beam time to research, cancer and associated research, also with multi-ion sources. And that will make CIST unique. And on the other hand, even though 50% of the beam time will be dedicated to research, we will be able to treat about 400 or 500 patients per year, which is a need for a population of about 20 million inhabitants. And this facility is going to be unique also in the sense that is not going to be international only from the research part, but also international from the medical part, and is also nice words to use for like medical CERN, and will offer capacity for about 1,000 researchers from all over Europe, because the research, as you will see in a moment, will be cutting edge, attractive for also for Western Europe. Now, there is a strong pan-European dimension of the CIST project. Other two strategic objectives, very important one, fighting against cancer is top priority for our society. Today, we are talking about COVID, but once COVID is in the past, cancer will remain one of the biggest health issue. Particle therapy has shown to be a very, very promising tool. And again, we will hear, I'm sure a lot of discussion will be today on that and statistics to be shown, but it is now overdue to advance this therapy with ion beams. How we can do that? We can do that only by building international cooperation, which we are presently doing. And this CIST project is now strongly helped by 18 renowned research center and clinics from Europe, and also a number of university institutes and clinics are involved also from the CE side. Now, comprehensive dimension, I mentioned 50% of the beam time dedicated to research, but there are other selling, unique selling points. We are going to offer multidisciplinary research with heavy ions, and that will be cutting edge thanks to the breakthrough in technology. And another very important point, we are building this cooperation and this institute in the region of Southeast Europe by using a special instrument of science diplomacy. Now we talk about multidisciplinary research. You can see here we are going to offer preclinical, clinical, industrial research, material research, ultra high dose rate flash, and all this will be special thanks to the breakthrough in technology. And here the idea is to push for more compact and much cheaper superconducting synchrotron. Even whether this will be achieved with the CIST or elsewhere, is still our machine synchrotron is not going to be like presently existing one. It will be much faster with much higher beam intensity, which will offer actually possibility to treat even larger number of tumor types, but what for sure we are going to use is superconducting gantry. Now, as to the science diplomacy, and I will mention in a moment in a separate slide how much we really achieved so far on political scene. The one thing which I want to flash here, because I don't have a special slide before, I have slides on the political achievements, but here in this map, you see Europe, and you see many points, and these points are particle therapies. Most of these machines are proton machines. I mentioned four are only ion. But if you see region of Southeast Europe with 40 million inhabitants, this, you see always a gray zone. If you would like now to map Europe with all kinds of research infrastructures based on newest technology, you will see high density of the points everywhere in Europe, but our region still remains always a gray zone. So as I mentioned, quite a lot has been achieved on political scene. Already in October 2017, we have achieved to sign declaration of intent. And this declaration was the moment when this initiative of CEAST was transformed into the regional project, because the eight ministers of science, or corresponding ministers or their representatives, signed a declaration. So from eight countries. At that time, we had actually 10 countries on the CERN ground, actually 10 countries, 10 ministers from 10 countries on CERN ground. Was signature was at CERN, but was also a unique moment for CERN, because at CERN, politicians are coming daily. But that was unique because we had 10 ministers at the same time, and also Greece was present. And Greece decided to, I think at the last moment, to change mind and took observer status together with Croatia. And then in 2019, a memorandum of cooperation was signed by six prime ministers of the region, and we are really looking forward to welcome, I hope soon, Greece also to sign this amendment to the memorandum. That was also a very nice event, because it was at the occasion of the sixth summit of the Berlin process. So here you see candidate members of the Southeast Europe, and in green these are countries which signed declaration of intent, and I mentioned Greece was took on observer status. So we received political and important political and scientific support for CEAST from European Commission. European Commission actually commissioner at that time, Carlos Moedas, really strongly recognized the importance of this of the project, and very quickly we received the first 1 million euro to start the first stage of design phase. And we are really now proud that we managed to successfully pass through very competitive call, where many applications from all over Europe were present, and we will receive extra 5 million euros from Horizon 2020 call, which will assure us to finalize design phase. So money would not be enough if we would not receive a strong help from renowned centers, from CERN, and then really our warm, and I don't know how to say, thanks to CERN, which decided to welcome CEAST and decided to host the activities in line with accelerator design. And then also GSI welcome to host activity in connection with R&D and scientific aspects. We receive also support from Atomic Energy Agency, which decided, which play important role for SESAMI project, which had also this mission of science diplomacy. And we receive first half million euros for capacity building. And we hope to have first fellows, CEAST Atomic Energy Agency fellows to start also to work for CEAST. Now, most recently, it is also very great, which will assure a long-term financing for the CEAST. CEAST is now part of economic investment plan for Western Balkans. And it's only research infrastructure which is part of this plan. Normally in this plan are only highways, railways, such type of infrastructure, but for the first time we have infrastructure, research infrastructure in this plan, which will assure also, let's say, money we cannot use. Western Balkans are not part of European Union, cannot use structural funds, but these are extra funds for development of Western Balkans. So we can also contribute with such funds, because we want we rely on, we will see in a moment that the at least 80% of investment should come from structural or such type of funds for development of the Western Balkan. Very important, we receive also political support of Switzerland, Swiss government, and they are going to support to SACE to develop science diplomacy roadmap. And there will be event in April organized by FDFA, and Switzerland will play a role for, let's say, will provide a neutral platform for most difficult decision. One of that will be size selection, which will be really transparent and open for all countries. And also what they are going to help us to come to the long-term legal entity. At this moment, we are legal entity as a CIST association via Swiss law. Quite a lot of progress has been achieved on scientific scene, and many people, I don't have a list of people that I think I would need several slides to put all the names of people who were participating so far. And we had a concept study finishing in 2017 and at 2018 at the forum in Trieste. This was presented, this concept study is now also published as the CERN Yellow Report. Ugo Amaldi was editor and play a strong role in that together with a lot of people involved. And we are very proud to tell you that we managed to apply for S3 roadmap. And the deadline was September 9. So CIST this new research infrastructure on health, single-sited, with many satellite hubs we are planning, digital hub, clinical hub, I don't know, many hubs, hubs for for development of accelerator parts, green energy hub and so on. But what is also nice is that I think we have a good chance because so far Europe was missing research infrastructure on health that was not part of S3 roadmap 2018. So, and the other very important part is that for the new EU program Horizon Europe, cancer, which has five missions, one of the five missions is cancer research. And so this means that if we are part of S3 roadmap, our pan-European dimension will be strongly recognized, and we will assure immediate 4 million euro for the preparatory phase. For this S3 application, it is really great that we receive a strong political support from nine governments. And from among these nine governments, also Switzerland and Hungary, a part of all these countries from the region, and Croatia also provided help, which is great. And also from CERN and from Tiara. And this S3 roadmap contains a pre-TDR, pre-technical design report, which was the outcome of this 1 million, which we got from European Commission, not 1 million of the people working, but also was based on this first stage of design phase. And also we have a business plan. This is a document of 350 pages. Now I come to the timeline. So I already mentioned we have a concept study in 2019, started design phase. We apply for this call and we manage to be successful. We apply for S3 roadmap. And in 2021, by end of 2021, we hope to have a site selection because we have to come to this moment. If everything goes well, we can start construction 2023. And we are lucky with this project. In 2028, we can treat first patient. Everybody say this is too much realistic, but I would say I don't think that is too much realistic. I think it's realistic because so far we were really moving with high speed, and I don't know why we should not continue according to this phase. For CIST, up to 240 million is required. One could say it's too much, but everything is relative. Research infrastructure are much more costly. For example, ELI project, which was realized in three countries, Czech Republic and Hungary and Romania, cost 850 million euros, and out of which 700 came from structural funds. So you see, with 240 million only, I could say, we can guarantee competitivity in Europe, and we rely on multiple sources of financing, EU structural cohesion funds, IPA funds, some contribution have have to come from the member states, of course, and other investment plans. What is really great is that we are building also green concept for CIST. It has to be green. Our region has potential for that. And in this case, CIST will be the first green particle concept therapy and research. Here we have this great effort of people who were working on S3 application. We have a complete master plan for all activities in not only per year, but also per quarter of the year. And also according to this color code, you can see we already know how much money per year for all kind of activities we would need. And finally, my last slide is, I want to thank to everybody who helped us. And I think in front of us is still a lot of to do. However, I think we really trace the road, and the project will have a chance to be realized in the C region only if political support in the region remains. If not, CIST will not stop. It will be realized in some other parts of Europe because it's such a great project. So thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Sanja, for this very nice overview and with many details on the recent news. I think we should have some questions now. I don't see in the chat, but if somebody wants to ask a question, please go ahead. Okay, no questions so far, neither in the chat. Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, Sanja.
And sorry once again for my joining much late.
No problem. We fill the time with Christian, no problem.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks again. So then, Mimoza, you can start sharing your screen. I have introduced you. Mimoza is a member of a steering committee from Skopje, and she's working a lot with statistics of cancer in the area. Go ahead. Mimoza, we cannot hear you.
Yeah. Hi, okay. Everybody. Kalimera se olous.
Kalimera. Maybe you can put your screen, full screen, your presentation.
Okay.
Yeah. Perfect.
Okay, so, yes, the doctors, let me start with this introduction. The doctors are turning cancer patients into organs. Actually, they speak about organs. The physics people speak about physical values, and then the politicians speak about money and numbers and diplomacy, and then statistics is the worst part of this society. It turns the patients into numbers. But anyways, somebody has to do this job and take into account all the numbers and make predictions for the future. So the cancer in the CE region is examined in a manner that we can find how much we are similar to each other and how much we are different from the neighbors, from the Western Europe, from the Middle Europe. And if we see this map, this is our Southeastern European region. It is also a gray map on the map of particle therapy centers. We are not covered. Actually, all our governments are sending people to be treated to foreign centers instead of having one center for covering 40 million of population. Countries are facing in Southeastern Europe more challenges in combating cancer compared to the Western Europe because of lack of equipment, which doesn't apply to every country. In the CE, then lack of cancer registries and data analysis. This is frightening how less we have from Western Europe. And we are, of course, as we mentioned on the beginning and the previous speakers mentioned, we are lacking advanced treatment. So there is a tool to calculate the stuff, calculate the cancer today, calculate over time, calculate tomorrow. This was a European project from Horizon Program, which developed a wonderful tool for calculations. But somebody said, and I agree with this, Bray and Muller, I don't know how to pronounce this, 2006, they said we have to be very cautious with predictions because the factors and the parameters that are taken into the predictions may change and they cannot be applied for a long run, long-term calculations. So let us mention some of those parameters that are obviously changing our life and preventing us from making any projections and accurate with high accuracy predictions, because our destiny currently, we can see all of us is aware that it's no more in our hands. So somebody else is dictating this, what is going to happen. For example, we have global pandemic, and this will, for example, very affect the immigration, which was taken into account into calculations or predictions. So if we stop immigrating, if the world freezes the way it is frozen currently, then we cannot apply anymore the model of Globocan. Then the impact of Brexit is also very unpredictable, because the reversal migrations towards the CEE countries is also very, very possible. And the COVID pandemic also will make very substantial changes on the pyramid of age of the population of each country, because it is cutting the bottom of the pyramid where the elders are presented with a certain number. So we will have to recalculate and make revision. And until then, until we have a stable, not so dynamic situation, we have to find a way to calculate our future cancers. So the CEST Particle Therapy Center, which will be a research center as well, will treat patients. So let's say it will be the patient will be treated sometimes at 2029, in 9 years from today. At that moment, we can treat 375 patients at the beginning from all the CE region. And then this number will perpetually be improved and grow up to 1,000 patients, because the beam will be optimized, the parameters will be better, the patient throughput will be made higher, and then selection criteria should be made very strict, because you cannot treat 1,000 maximum in this center, maybe more, but currently we have to count on 1,000. So let's see what is the population, just to show you how much unpredictable and how much influence does have the population changes on everything, the situation. So if you can see Greece is growing up till 2010 and then losing population. Losing population until 2020. The predictions show that it will continue losing, but these points here between 2020 and 2040, the predictions are very inaccurate, because they don't take into account the parameters of frozen world. So we are having here another country like that. Bulgaria is the most affected by losing the population. So the migration is highest there, started very early. And then this is the course. All the other countries have more stable courses, like North Macedonia and Slovenia, and then Serbia are having, and probably Montenegro as well here, brown thing, are having quite stable according to the numbers and the predictions. All the others are presented by this. And we don't know whether we should apply and we should rely on this kind of predictions. Also, the GDP per capita, which is the economy picture of each country, is presented during the time. The evolution of the GDP per capita is presented with these curves here. So the highest GDP per capita is presented for Greece and for Slovenia, and all the others, this is Croatia, is trying to reach up between the low and the high Southeastern European economy developed countries. And this is the bunch here presenting very, very much similar behavior. And then those are outside European Union, except for Bulgaria, the gray line. which is also improving. So this is also affecting the cancer treatment. How rich the people are, how rich the countries and investing in health, it means the cancer will be treated better. It is reflected always with the money, but not so much sometimes, as we will see in the future presentation, future slides. So if you want to see the registries of the databases for the Southeastern European countries, you will be very disappointed. Only Bulgaria, Croatia, and Slovenia have a complete database on the national numbers of the cancer incidence and cancer deaths due to the cancer. Serbia is only central Serbia, just a region. Imagine 3 out of 10 countries, including Kosovo here, we have a problem with calculations. We are starting with the premises that we are all equal countries. Based on this, we can develop model to be applied to other countries and make the calculations. If we present the data that was available, these are empirical data, not the red dots, but the colored dots. And if we put for comparison Italy 8 registers, just to show you that Italy doesn't also have a registry on a national range, they have 8 regions only. So we see somehow it is very linear growth of the cancer incidences in one. This is just a real incidence. So those databases, except for Italy, those 3 are available for our future calculations in, as regional numbers. So if we make the predictions with the assistance of the tool, which is called Globocan, so you can see how the cancer grows everywhere, but doesn't grow in Bulgaria, which makes me wonder why not in Bulgaria. Yes, the prediction is that they will lose a lot of population, so the migration rate is terrible there, but the migration rate is everywhere except in some countries. Serbia is 0. I mean, Montenegro is losing population. Croatia is losing. Macedonia, I've noticed yesterday, North Macedonia is also losing population. And Greece, very much. But in Greece, we have growth. So I'm wondering of the validity. Sorry?
5 minutes.
Yeah, okay. If we make comparison with the projections on the national statistics that are, we can make the course and the Globocan, we can see a big discrepancy. See Bulgaria, a huge discrepancy. Croatia, huge discrepancy. Only for Slovenia, it is because they don't have a high migration rate. So if you see this slide here, you can see the differences between those two models are about 20%. So if we count on calculating the number of future patients at 2030, when we will have the treatment center ready already to treat patients, then we have to go with those numbers and make the selection filter for the patients that will occur at that time, not now, but then. Also, the children cancers here are presented. So we have average 2.6 incidence, because the children cancer incidence is not related to the age, because the age is the one that increases the probability of appearance of cancers. So this is not affected by the age, and see the incidence is probably just 2.6 in average and very close of this region. So we can estimate the number, how much kids we will have sick of cancer at 2020, and we will make the selection for the kids that will profit and benefit from the particle therapy the most, because their cancers are treatable with all others, but they're leaving traces of the on the healthy tissues are very high. So Bulgaria mortality, Albania mortality, moving with the years. And you can see the prediction here in Croatia following the last course with the orange points. is broken here. There is a breaking point here. Greece doesn't have a breaking point. It goes smooth as if nothing happens. I don't know. The statistics are always strange. North Macedonia, very little bending here. Slovenia, bending, but you can predict the future course here. If you exclude the losing of the population, the immigration, if you count for zero. So this would be the numbers, not the numbers that Globokan gives us, maybe not exactly those numbers, but they will be probably more reliable to calculate. And this is the last slide. I'm going to stop here because it's too many slides to show more, maybe another one. See your country, how far is your country with incidence to mortality. This is a parameter that shows how good the countries are managing the cancer patients and how much of them survive. So in Greece, you see that more than half of the people mortality to incidence, less than half of the people die from cancer. So they survive, 50% survives. But all the other European countries, especially Ireland and Switzerland, are having 1/3 of the population affected by cancer is surviving. The rest is dying. If you see Bosnia and Herzegovina and Croatia as well, they are having a very high mortality to incidence ratio, dying much more than the patients of the other Western European countries. So
I suggest now that you are in the data part, please go through.
Yes, okay, Greece is here.
It is important that we see the data, so just flash the data with,
Yeah, this is Greece here. One of the reasons why is Greece good doing is probably they discovered the cancer, early detection of the cancer, because they have a comparable and even better number of this diagnostic imaging. This is the set of diagnostic imaging, CT, MRI, gamma, and mammography, and also PET scan, positron emission tomography. So compared to the West, you are really doing good. All the other countries, so this might be the reason why you're dealing better than the others in the region. Density of Linux is also not so bad. Greece is almost, Slovenia is much better. But then the line here is made at optimum 7. It is according to one author here that the optimum number, density of Linux, that means Linux number, and 1 million population. So the density 7 is the optimum. So you are very much towards the optimum, and Slovenia is approaching. These are for the doctors to see what are the cancers that are treatable with proton therapy and with carbon ion therapy. You can go through this table alone from my presentation. And then this is the last conclusion here, actually, that for your population of 10,000, 10,000,076, which I found the last data, meaning that you can treat when the treatment is on the beginning of the Southeastern European treatment center, 375, you can treat 72, actually 1/4 of the total throughput of the patients of this facility can work for your patients if you join and be a part of this. Okay, so the conclusions, collecting data is a big challenge. It has to be improved by making databases and making registries on a regional value. Joins Southeastern European Cancer Registry is needed immediately. I mean, we have to do this, and in order to be able to play with the numbers, we have to have numbers. So predictions and projections for the 2030 could be very inaccurate if we rely on the calculators that are produced by the World Health Organization projects. And strict patient selection criteria are needed, because we are 9 years will go like this, and we can have this center, and we have to have the numbers and predict the numbers and make strict selection criteria, because we don't have to struggle with this challenge in the future. So thank you for your attention.
Thanks very much, Mimoza. This is a challenging work, and certainly the numbers, as you say, are important and frightening. Any questions from participants? Let me check the chat. No, I don't see in the chat any questions. Is there anybody that would like to ask something? We have a couple of minutes. If not, we thank you again, Mimoza. You can stop sharing. Mm-hmm. And, yes, is somebody that asked something? So then we can proceed with Maurizio Vretenar from CERN, who is the group leader of NIMS project, and he's going to discuss the next generation of accelerators for cancer therapy. Thank you, Maurizio.
Yes, thank you, Yota. Can you hear me? Yes.
Very well.
Okay.
With your screen, you can put it full screen.
I'm trying. Now it works. Okay. Yes. So good morning, Kalimera, in particular to our colleagues connected from Greece. So my presentation will be, I will show how technologies that were developed for particle physics can be applied to medicine. And all this comes from CERN. So this is what you see in this first slide is the footprint of our underground accelerator, the Large Hadron Collider, near the lake of Geneva. Now we are all working from home. So in particular, I am connecting from my home, which is somewhere there, in this picture. Yes, and what we have seen is just an image of CERN, which is an international organization, which was founded in 1954 by 12 European states. And Greece was one of the founding countries of CERN. So in a sense, CERN is also yours, is also Greek, and you see that in the flags outside of CERN, there is the Greek flag is here. They are in alphabetic order, so there is some advantage in Greece. Nowadays, CERN has grown to 23 member states, plus a number of associate members, and has a total of almost 3,000 staff. But we have more than 10,000 users that come regularly to CERN to use our facilities for a budget of more than 1 billion euros per year. So it's a big center. What are we doing at CERN? So the mission of CERN, number one, is to push back the frontiers of knowledge, which is very general, but in particular, it is applied to particle physics and to discoveries, to try to discover the secrets of the universe, Big Bang, the structure of matter. But to do that, we need technologies. We need technologies for accelerators and for detectors, and these technologies can also be used for medicine. And in fact, other parts of the CERN mission are to train scientists and engineers for tomorrow, and also to unite people from different countries and cultures, from the 23 member states, but also for the more than 100 countries from where our users are coming. So we speak all languages in the world, basically, or at least we try. And I want to show in my presentation is how many nice things you can do with accelerators, particle accelerators, in particular for medicine. The accelerators are basically tools, machines that are built to produce beams of particles, to give energy to the smallest components of matter, mainly protons, electrons, or heavy ions, and then use them for experiment. You can smash the particles one against the other, and you can see the new particles that are created, from which you can deduct the structure of the particle themselves, the structure of the matter. But also you can use these beams of particles as very precise tools to enter the body, medicine, but also to make weldings in a mechanical shop. You can use it also to dope semiconductors. You can use them for environmental applications. So there are really many applications of these precise ways of delivering a lot of energy in a very tiny volume of matter. So for medicine, you can use these accelerators to produce isotopes. So it starts from the bottom, basically, of this drawing. So you can produce radioisotopes, and this is the basis of emission tomography, for example, positron emission tomography. You can use these beams to produce X-rays, and this is the basis for radiation therapy. So the X-ray Linux that Mimosa mentioned in her presentation are all fed by a small particle accelerators, and there are about 14,000 in the world. So it's the most popular particle accelerator, is the one which is used to produce X-rays. And then what is interesting for us today is that there is a more sophisticated way of using these beams directly on the patient, not as secondary beams, but hitting directly the patient, which is, as Christian said, more dangerous, but much more effective. So if you handle well your beam of particles, then the effect on the cancer can be much higher than with other type of radiation. And in particular, we will look today at therapy with protons and with ions that go both under the name of hadron therapy. In our jargon, in physics, protons and ions are hadrons, while electrons are leptons. All right, you have seen already in Christian's presentation that we exploit the beauty of the Bragg peak, the fact that protons and ions do not lose their energy, or they lose their energy very slowly after entering any material, including after entering the human body. And they have a kind of a window of maximum efficiency. At a certain depth, they deposit most of the energy, and we can calibrate this depth by changing the energy of the accelerator, out of the accelerator, and so we can really go very precisely on a tumor. This is very effective, but it's only the start of the story, because this Bragg peak shows how the energy is deposited. But as biologists and medical doctors tell us, there is a lot that happens when you deposit the energy. So there are many mechanisms that then go from depositing the energy to killing the tumor. And it is something that needs more study, more understanding, and is one of the reasons why we propose this facility in Southeast Europe, which is both a facility for treatment and for experiments, and for experimental validation and definition of the principles for ion therapy. You see that in the years, there is a big increase in the number of facilities that are being built for protons and ions. But what is the main problem of using carbon ions, ions and carbon ions? Christian has been showing that they are in fact much more effective than protons for treating cancer, but they are much more expensive. Much more expensive because the accelerator is huge. Here what you see is a three-dimensional scheme of the main European accelerator for carbon ions, which is in Heidelberg, Germany. And you see that you have a long beam line, a large synchrotron, that is the one where the energy is given to the particles. The particles are created here. They receive a first acceleration. They go to the synchrotron. Then they are extracted. Some of the particles go directly on the patients. And here you see how small is the couch with the patient here and here. Or they can go to a structure which is called the gantry that rotates to deliver the beam precisely at the angle that is needed for the particular type of treatment, the particular type of tumor that has to be treated. This gantry is a system with a lot of magnets that are meant to bend the beam. The beam is very rigid, it's not so easy to bend it. And so you end up in Heidelberg with a huge mechanical structure that you see here in the picture, the dimension of the people, and the dimension of this beast. It's really a lot of a very sophisticated mechanics and very expensive. Altogether, the accelerator system represents more than 75% of the construction and operation costs of such a facility. So this works very well. There are now in Europe four facilities that can deliver at the same time proton and carbon ion therapy. This one in Heidelberg, another one very important in Pavia in Italy, a second one in Germany, in Marburg, and the third one, which is the last of the series near Vienna, in Austria. The last of the series, because now the idea is that we have four facilities, but it will be difficult in Europe to build another one with the same technologies. So it's very heavy, very expensive. And if you want to go to a new facility like the one in Southeast Europe, we have to look for something different, or at least for an improvement of the present design or the present generation of therapy accelerators. And this is why we have started, in collaboration between CERN and CEAST, a program to see how we can come to more compact and less expensive designs for the accelerator, and how we can use the experience, the huge experience accumulated in the four European centers to come together to a common design, let's say, for the next generation of ion therapy machines. What are the requirements for this next generation machine? So we have organized a workshop already in June 2018, by the way, thanks to IOTA, who was one of the key organizers of this workshop, and of another one preceding it. Basically, all the discussion started in Crete, already in Greece, the year before, in 2017, and then we went to France in June 2018, where we gathered all the community interested in ion therapy in Europe, and they agreed that what they want is to concentrate on heavy ions more than on protons. Ions means carbon, but also helium, oxygen, other type of projectiles that can have a different impact on the tumors. And then go to the important requirement, which are, of course, lower cost, to bring down the cost of treatment, reduced footprint, something which is smaller, can fit either inside a hospital or very close to a hospital. Does not require a large space for to be built. Lower running costs, faster delivery with higher beam intensities, another important point. And the rotating gantry is a must. So only now the only facility in Europe that has a rotating gantry is Heidelberg. The others, they don't, because it is too expensive. But we have to find a way to make it smaller, to make it less expensive, and then operate with multiple ions. Okay, so these are the requirements, quite ambitious, quite challenging from the community. And at CERN, but not only at CERN, we like to take challenges. So we said, okay, yes, let's try. Let's try to see what we can do. We can do concentrating on heavy ions because proton therapy is now commercial. So you can buy a proton therapy machine on the market, but you cannot yet buy a complete ion therapy machine. And ion therapy is something which is very promising, but is also something where a lot of work is required on the technical side, on the acceptor side. So we have studied at CERN what we called NIMS, the Next Ion Medical Machine Study, and immediately we started to collaborate with the CEAST initiative, because CEAST for us is a strategic partner and a reference user. So if I develop technologies, I like to have a user who is going to use the technologies to interact with us, to give us the requirements. This is why CEAST for us is the reference user. And we have established a wide collaboration. So at CERN, we have seen part of our mission is to unite people. And when we do projects, also we want to collaborate. We don't want to work alone in our corner. It is not the type of science that we like. And we have started a large collaboration with CEAST, but also with Terra Foundation, with GSI, with many laboratories in Europe and even outside of Europe. You see the University of Melbourne, Australia is also working with us. Other institutes in India and in the Baltic countries are going to join soon the collaboration. And by the way, we are also collaborating with the Thessaloniki University on the production of medical radioisotopes. And you will have a presentation by Aris Marmaris later on this morning on this subject. So, okay, so a lot of people, but what is the people doing? We have considered three possible alternative options for the for our accelerator. One is, let's say, we stay with the type of the synchrotron, as in Heidelberg and in the other European facilities, but we try to do a better synchrotron. This is a very good option, the improved synchrotron. Or we said, okay, let's change also the synchrotron and go to superconductivity. Superconductivity is the key for reducing the size of accelerators. It's something which is becoming very, very, very common, very normal. Even MRI, for example, devices in hospital now are more and more based on superconducting magnets. It is becoming more industrial, and definitely in the future, I'm pretty sure that all synchrotrons for ion therapy will be superconducting. But what can we do to, there is still a lot of work, development work to be done. And we have definitely decided to also to work in this direction. And then we have considered another option of using a different type of accelerators, a linear accelerator, which is that you see here, which is another possible option. And we have compared these three accelerator options, in particular for the case of the CEAST, which is our reference user. What you can see here are three different layouts for a research and therapy facility based on the three options that you've seen before: a normal synchrotron, a superconducting synchrotron, and a linear accelerator. What you see here is that basically you gain quite a lot in the two options of synchrotron and the LINAC in terms of size of accelerator, even if the size of the therapy and the experimental part is not changed. So basically the gain is 50% in the accelerator dimensions, but only 15% in the overall facility dimensions. And by the way, what is important is that superconducting and linear accelerator are 20% less expensive, which is already a good gain, and this without considering another saving of money for the lower dimension of the building. But nevertheless, there is a lot of research and development needed for these two options, superconducting synchrotron and LINAC. So what we have decided for the synchrotron of for the CEAST is that we take as a baseline design the normal conducting advanced synchrotron, this option here, which is something where we can start construction tomorrow if we have the budget. So if we have the money, we can immediately start building this type of machine. There is not much R&D work needed. So we keep this as baseline, but the superconducting version remains in our plan as a future advanced option in case the development of superconducting magnet is successful and in case of delays in the construction plan of the CEAST. So if the CEAST is funded tomorrow, it will be normal conducting. If it is funded the day after tomorrow, it will hopefully be something like this, superconducting. But we discard for the moment the LINAC as an option for CEAST. So, very good. So a few more details. So this is very technical. I don't want to go into the technical details, but for the synchrotron of CEAST, it is not a copy of Heidelberg or KNAU of the existing centers. There are a lot of improvements in the performance of the accelerator. And in particular, the most important one is in the intensity, on the number of particles that you accelerate, which is 20 times higher what we want to do than in the present centers. This is very challenging. So it's an interesting, nice challenge from the machine physics point of view, but this allows much faster treatment times and much higher throughput of patients. You can treat many more patients in this facility of what you can do in the present facilities. And then we add a lot of additional modes to extract the beam out of the machine for experiments, for tests, and possible for new techniques for treatment, new treatment modalities. So it's really a research machine before or being a therapy machine. And we can also accelerate many types of these different particles in this type of accelerator. There is these are technical details on how we want to build this accelerator. There are also different options how to make it. And this, I only just want to show this because it's an interesting proposal on an alternative layout for the accelerator, which comes from our colleagues in Australia that are also working on it. So to show you also how much international our collaboration is and how much we value contributions coming from different countries. So now we go to the superconducting synchrotron. The superconducting synchrotron you see has a big advantage with respect to the conventional synchrotrons, because this you see, for example, here the footprint of the present facilities in Italy and in Austria is compared to a similar facility with a superconducting ring. It's really 50% smaller, the accelerator, and in this case, you can have also a great, in the case of a therapy system with like this one, you can really save also a lot on the rest of the facility or the dimensions. You need superconducting magnets at high field, which are bent. So the main problem is that most of the superconducting magnets nowadays are straight, while here you have to make magnets at 90 degrees or probably a bit less, 30 or 60 degrees. So it's a challenge. It will take some time to go through this challenge. There are several options on how to do it. These are studies of magnets that have been started by my colleagues. And I'm glad to announce that this week, by the way, on Tuesday, a few days ago, we have learned that our two projects that we have submitted to the European Commission for funding, one is called HeatWeb+ and the other is called HIFAST, that have a strong activities for the design and prototyping of superconducting magnets for medical machines, they have been approved. So we have now funding and the work program for the next 3 years for the development of the superconducting magnets that you see here for a superconducting medical synchrotron for ion therapy. And also we have the funding for completing the design of the normal conducting synchrotron. What is our final goal? This is not CEAST, is even beyond CEAST. The idea is that after the research machine, next tech should be a commercial accelerator for ion therapy. And this can be only superconducting. You see here two examples of designs that we have made, thanks, by the way, to our very good architect, who is not far from you in Thessaloniki. You will have a presentation later on different layouts, so Dimitris Kaprinis. And here you see two designs, one with two treatment rooms and the other with a single therapy room in about 1,000 square meters, including all the shielding. So in 1,000 square meters, 21 meters by 56, you have a complete system for ion therapy with one rotating gantry of the superconducting type. And here you see the layout that Dimitris has prepared of the CEAST facility, the baseline design, yes, where you have the normal conducting synchrotron, a LINAC, the ear accelerator as injector. I will tell you what we can do in this room later on, at the end of the LINAC, but at the end of the synchrotron, the beam can go to three rooms for treatment and two rooms for experiments on two different sides of the facility. What can you do with the LINAC? The LINAC is the injector which is used to produce the particles and inject them into the synchrotron. Because the synchrotron is pulsed, the LINAC makes an injection, boom, you send some particles to the synchrotron, then it waits until parts are accelerated and sent to the patient, and then you fill again the synchrotron. So there is a lot of time when the LINAC is actually not running for the synchrotron. And an idea that we have been working at is to use this LINAC in this idle time to produce medical radioisotopes. Radioisotopes for what? First of all, for imaging, because as we have seen, PET scanning relies on fluoride 18, but also on lower on radioisotopes with a lower duration that have less give less radiation to the patient, like carbon 12, that could be built close to the hospital and could be built in this facility in a parasitic mode, basically. But also you can produce radioisotopes for treatment, and there is a lot of interest now in the medical world for therapy with alpha particles. It is called TAT, targeted alpha therapy, which consists in injecting an alpha emitter into the patient that when connected to an antibody can be can stick directly to the tumor and kill locally the tumors. Alpha emitters are very deadly, very dangerous at very short distances. So this would be an ideal way of attacking locally the tumor, but there is still a lot of experimentation to be made before alpha therapy becomes a conventional, a routine way for treating tumors. But this LINAC would be an excellent way, an excellent tool to produce alpha emitters. Okay, now I go, I have a few words more on the game tree, because as I told you, the game tree, so this rotating mechanism to direct the beam on the patient, it's something which is big, and this must be superconducting. You can already now buy a superconducting game tree from the Japanese. There's a lot of work that has been done by Toshiba in Japan, but not this is very expensive, by the way, but we want to be better. We want to make something simple, less expensive, and if possible, more compact, what the Japanese do. And here you have a design that has been recently developed together by the Terra. Terra is a foundation, an Italian foundation that is supporting studies for hadron therapy, and CERN together. They did work on the concept of a very light, you see, a very small gantry that does not rotate for the full 360 degrees, but only for the 180 or maybe even 90 degrees that you actually need to treat all tumors, because you can always turn the patient without problems. The patient is always preferred that it is being lying on the couch, because you have to, you need, what is very important is the perfect correspondence between the imaging that is done just before the treatment and the treatment itself. So the patients have to be in the same position for the imaging, for the treatment, but you can always rotate the patient instead of rotating this big mechanical device. And so you can rotate by only 180 or 90 degrees, and have a much lighter structure, which requires some special superconducting magnets. These are superconducting magnets, you see, in one and two cryostats. So, and this is the design which is very promising, and all the system would, the weight of the system would be only 20 tons, which is more than 10 times less than other gantry designs. All this can be combined on what you have seen, which is, for the case of CEAST, this is the nice drawing, as well prepared by Dimitris, where you see here the roof is removed, and what you see here are the parts that I have described before. The synchrotron, and here the treatment rooms, the gantry, and on this side you have the experimental rooms. All this can be built, if all according to the schedule, in such a way to be ready by 2029. And an important point is that an idea of the CEAST is that there is not only the central facility where the accelerator and the medical center are located, but there are a lot of hubs of ancillary locations that where you can house an accelerator development facility, a scientific hub for instrument development, a research hub for animals, a digital hub to treat the huge amount of data that are going to be produced by this research center, and of course the clinical hub, the training hub, and then what is called the sustainability hub to provide the green energy that will feed this system. So it's really a very complete structure that is meant to propel ion therapy towards its next generation. So this is my last slide. So my conclusions are that really medical accelerators is a vast and promising field, which is connected to medicine, and medicine is one of the main technology drivers of the 21st century. So in the previous centuries, the technology driver was often war. If you were working to develop new weapons, then you had a lot of funding and a lot of attention. Nowadays, if you work for medicine, this is where you can have funding, you can have attention, and where this is what now is pushing the technology. So it's a very, very good move. We hope it will remain like that. And medicine, for us, working in technologies, is one of now of the main technology drivers. And there is a wide space for improvements, for exciting new developments, in particular for the direction of cancer therapy with ions and with isotopes. And also the new projects can open new perspectives, not only the fight against cancer, but will open considerable economic opportunities. Because if this kind of therapies are successful, and if you can really succeed in reducing the size and the cost of the machines, then we are ready to transfer this technology to industries, and this will open new markets for our industry towards in the field of medicine. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Maurizio. It's nice to see that ideas can become reality once you put the machine down. And personally, I liked this parallelism between the war and medicine. So now we have the fight against cancer to handle the kind of weapons that we have.
It's about, yes, sir.
So I don't see in the chat any question. Anybody from the audience that would like to ask something?
Yeah, Jota, this is Dimitris, Rafaelidis. Yes. I do have a question.
Yes, please. Yes.
Hi, Maurizio. I'm. Hi. Let me introduce myself. I'm professor in computer science at Maastricht University at this point. So in a few months, I will return back to Greece. So I have. Yeah. So I have a question. So I guess you have to configure millions of parameters when you want to produce the beams, right? In the accelerators, in the synchrotron, in the magnets, and so on. So does it require human inspection in the sense that you have, I guess, in your simulations, you have to evaluate the effectiveness of the beam, of the therapy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And at the same time, you have also to minimize the human effort, right? To inspect the effectiveness of your simulations.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So,
yes.
How do you do that?
Yes, sir. Okay, there are two. So, on the one hand, you have the accelerator where really you have hundreds of thousands of parameters that you have to control in order to give for your beam, the accelerator, to have the required quality and stability for medical needs. So I remember that a friend of mine who runs a company that builds control systems for accelerators, he told me that there is a factor of 4 in the size and cost of a control system for a medical accelerator with respect to a normal accelerator for science.
I can guess well, yes.
Yes, yes. So he told me, roughly speaking, it's 4 times the cost, yes. And by the way, I've seen that also that today was connected to our meeting, Eugenia Aziangeli, who is Greek, who was the leader of the control group at CERN for accelerator controls. And so she can also explain you how complex it is to control an accelerator. And then there is another point, which is once you know that you have a beam with sufficient quality for medicine, and this is you need also to treat the patient, to follow a treatment plan and to check your treatment plan. So The answer is yes, it is very complex. It's very complex for a medical accelerator in particular. The problem is that it has to be very fast. Mm-hmm. So it's, you have to react in terms of milliseconds. So you have to rely on the machines, on the control system, not on the human control. So at the end, let's say, the goal is that very little, you should not really rely on the human operators. You should rely on the control system. And there is a lot of interesting development work to be done in this field, definitely.
I was actually asking that because we can actually narrow down the search space of the parameters, right? Learning from the past cases, right? Exactly. So that you can actually minimize the human effort and maximize your results, the effectiveness of the therapy. This is why I'm asking. So, and to be more precise, my question is if you are actually using SAT right now at this point to do that. If you are, for example, using a machine learning method to learn from previous cases.
Yes, okay. I don't know precisely for medical accelerators, but in general for accelerators, we are now starting to apply machine learning, and this is one of the directions where we are going.
Oh, good to know that. Okay.
Yes. There is quite a lot of work, but I don't know precisely for medical accelerators how much machine learning is used or can be used. Yes.
Thank you very much.
We have discussed a little bit with Dimitrios, and he's an expert in machine learning. So somehow going back to Greece, it is also a good kind of project. No? Evgenia, I thought she was about to say something. I saw her popping up in the screen.
No, thank you. I have nothing to say. I was just wanted to answer any question if there were any.
Yes.
Mauricio mentioned my name.
Okay. Any other questions? I'm wondering if there are any other questions for all the presentations that people would like to ask now. Okay, so I don't see in the chat either. I think we break here and we resume in 10 minutes. It will be 10:15 for Geneva time and 11:15 in Greece. Thanks for your participation so far and see you in a while.
Thank you.